Welcome to the Bangers List podcast, where the facts are made up and the hosts don't matter. Daniel, Julian, how are we this week, boys?
Going great. Getting back out in the world, you know, it's been fantastic.
That's what I'd like to hear. So we've
nothing's really changed for me. I still do stuff.
So we've had a directive from the basically the controller of the playlist, and he said this week we're talking about August Burns Red and their banger Defender. So we're going to jump into a sample right now. All right, so for the last year we've been doing the podcast, you guys bring up this band every week for some reason. So tell me about this song, tell me why you love it so much and why they're so good.
Fuck, where do we even start on this one? It has been a long time coming, I will admit that. So August Burns Red, like I've been listening back to our, like I'm just going to get sidetracked straight away. I've been listening back to our podcast and we are so fucking horrible with structure. Like sometimes we'll have like a band's full history, their entire discography, and then other times it's like, yeah, these guys play instruments, now let's talk about potatoes. So yes. I guess in true fashion, we'll just a little bit about the band, I suppose, because we're not going to do them more than once, so we should probably do give them due diligence. They are from Lancaster, Pennsylvania. They started in 2003. They have had three vocalists. They haven't had a member change since 2006.
Yeah, look, so it's weird that that's your information because I thought they had just the same guys for over a decade, just the same bunch of mates.
No, they had two lead singers that were, one did an EP and one did their first full length, and then basically Jake Lurs came on, and the same, their bass player changed around that time as well. And since then, since 2006, it's been the same lineup consistently. And they've done 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, nine, including a Christmas-themed metalcore record. They have done 9 records and a couple of EPs.
Fantastic. And so this Defender song is obviously off their newest album.
That's correct. It's called Guardians.
It's called Guardians, and you guys have decided that it's one of the best of the album, or why do people want to hear this one? Why is it the one that we've got on the playlist?
Well, I think I popped this one on the playlist because it was the first song, the lead single from Guardians. It was the first one they released, and it was all part of the hype, you know? It was like, oh, new ABR, better pop it on the bangers list and spam you guys with it. So yeah, I really rate the song, but I don't think it's on the album.
If you didn't put it there, I would have. I haven't listened to one of the album, but yeah, if you hadn't put it there, I would have, because it is just it's a good song, and it is a band that we talk about a lot. So I think it's probably, like I said, it was well overdue.
Talking about
them. I guess the best place to start with them is the fact that, from what I've seen and what I've heard from talking to people, they're a band that is not like disliked by very few. They're sort of hard to level criticism at because, yes, they have a very metalcore sound, which has evolved over the years, and they do sort of stick to their guns and they stick to their long suit, but their long suits are quite broad as well. But I've never heard anyone really say anything seriously critical about them that actually sticks to them as well.
Yeah, all the members seem incredibly humble and they kind of let their music speak for themselves. And I don't think that level of fame where they become dickheads, if that's something that happens, I think
And I mean, you know, there's the whole Christian side of it as well. Like, you know, these guys started when, I think we've talked about this before as well, like when Christian metal and Christian hardcore was like a really big thing. But they've always sort of like, they've always said, look, some of us are Christians, some of us aren't. You know, like we don't really, they don't involve their religion in their music.
But people will have reportedly like said to them, oh, you said the word shit in this song or in this interview, and I thought you were better than that, and I'm not going to support your band or listen to your music anymore. So there is plenty of people out there. That's just not the kind of criticism you'd really worry about. It's just,
yeah.
Who cares?
So oh, you're going to get that.
Yeah. Like, look, when I was fucking 18, if a band was anything remotely close to Christian, I just did. Like I said before with Under Oath, I didn't want a bar of them. I was like, nah. You know, it's Godcore. I don't want to do it. I don't listen to Godcore, you know, which is what I sort of jokingly refer to these guys as. But no, they're like you say, they're a band that just their music speaks for them and it speaks very fucking loud because you can go from record to record with August Burns Red and you'll always say that's an August Burns Red record, but you'll never say that's boring.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think they're all very talented musicians in their own right. They come together, they work really well together, but I think that one of the key factors that influencing the fact that they are so well liked or at least not disliked is they deliver consistently. Like they're all, like you said, it's always an August Burns Red album. Like, yeah, that's ABR to a T. And like, you know, you can, the direction, musical direction has maybe changed somewhat, bringing in some, you know, some more melodic touches here and there in some of their records, but overall it's still ABR and you know what you're going to get. And it's fucking,
I think they've been criticized for that though. That, you know, there's so much consistency, it becomes boring for some, but
you can't win. Hey, like
you cannot win. That is exactly right. You're not going to please everyone always. No,
it's the Amity Parkway argument as well. Like even when a band is a super high caliber, if they continue to do something similar, I just shrugged. No one saw that. I keep forgetting because I can see both of you on the screen, but I keep forgetting that like no one can fucking see what I'm doing. Look, I think it's simply you're never going to fucking win. You're not going to make everyone happy. There's always going to be some asshole in the comments in YouTube that wants to just fucking whinge about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just too easy to whinge these days.
Yeah.
Too fucking easy.
Well, it's too easy to get your opinion out as well. Like, it's not that, like, social media bugs me because it's not that I have more access to people that are stupid. It's that more stupid people have a bigger visibility to me.
Oh, yeah. Like, we're a classic example. You know what
I mean? Like, I don't go looking for this. What were you going to say, Joel?
We're a classic example because, like, any idiot can have an opinion. But does anyone want to hear it?
Exactly right. And every cunt stayed up till 1 a.m. talking about we should do a podcast. And then a bunch of, like, Gen X, Gen Y losers decided, hey, let's do this.
Exactly.
So
back to the song in hand, Defender. So I always get really excited when we do a song that's what I would say, like right in the vein of just basic metalcore, the roots of the playlist and stuff like that. But this one, the best thing about it for me, it's got two massive breakdowns, right?
Yeah.
And they're the highlight of the song for me, I'd say, besides the lyrics and the content of the lyrics.
Which
we should get to right now, because what is this song about to you guys? I'll just start by saying after my first and second listen, I didn't hear the lyrics very well, but I thought it was about being a father. So it resonated with me and I gave it a few more chances and it grew on me. And I really like the song now, but I was wrong. Of course, I was completely wrong. I think it's not about being a father at all. You guys, what is it about?
You go, Daniel.
No, I was going to say you take it away, Julian, but...
you go.
Look, I'm not sure where to start with it. Like, I don't know what to make of it because I know that, like you mentioned before, that they don't really talk about their religious views in their lyrics. I don't think that's the case here, but there have been times where they've clearly done it in a metaphorical sense.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, I don't know if there's anything like that.
On that note, quickly, because we were just on that note, from everything I've heard from them, this song as well, their lyrics, you couldn't level any sort of like dogmatic undertones at them, but they always have a good message or a well painted picture. You know, they're never really the kind of, oh, we'll sing about something basic or like, you know, my ex broke up with me, whatever. It's always quite an elaborate sort of painting, I guess. And I think that's with this as well. To answer Joel's question directly, I haven't actually put a lot of thought into it. There are a few themes here. You know, this defender that he's talking about could be the state of the world at the moment. You know, there's a lot of shit going on, obviously. Or it could be just a strength people need to find within themselves to help themselves overcome their issues. You know, there's a lot of wordplay in there that sort of pushes and pulls you in a couple of different directions as to what you could think about it is. So I don't.
It's actually from like listening to it a lot and reading the lyrics. It is actually about having someone in your corner to support you, and the need for that, which I think, especially like all the time, but especially now, the amount of people that will need support, whether it's emotional or physical. I guess it's about having that someone there to support you. A lot of the lines really say clearly about that.
I don't know. About thinking about it now, like that makes sense. I'm looking, that one line I love, righteous wrath wrapped in empathy.
Yeah. And that's why I thought it was, that line made me think it was about being a father or a father. But then the more I looked into this, more about, having someone that is a voice that shakes as he calms the quake.
That ultimately, that when you're being supportive for someone, you have this like very, like if it's someone you care about that's had something happen to them, you have a very, very like aggressive, well, in my, like I would have a very aggressive kind of like defensive kind of stina. You want to become that defender, I guess. But the whole wrapped in empathy thing is, you know, the way you handle this person is that outer layer. And then there's that inner sort of fire that burns in you, I suppose.
Yeah, it actually, I think it's just a lyrically beautiful song. It's written so well. So probably interesting to say that. And one of the only lines that I can't quite understand is like, there is no judge, I'm the jury, and the defendant. The gavel has no hand. Who will deliver the sentence? I don't know that fits into the song just because I didn't write it. I don't have the understanding for it, but it's a really strong, powerful line and it goes straight into the big breakdown.
Yeah.
And just on its own, it's great, but I have no fucking idea how.
I was looking at that as you read it. It's just, it reminds me a lot of another song of theirs. You know, have you heard Provision?
Yeah.
So Provision was a lead single off one of their other. The line from Provision is, "I am the culprit, the victim, the casualty, and the cause." Mm-hmm. So just a random sort of side note. It just reminded me of that with that sort of similar kind of imagery. But that song was about the drummer had this friend, like long story short, the drummer had this friend, Matt Griner, and his friend basically scammed him out of a whole bunch of money. He had this like pyramid sort of Ponzi scheme happening. And then him and his wife, I think, invested some money because they were friends. And then it all fell out, and he found out that this guy had just been stealing money from everyone, and he's in jail now. And that song sort of talks about that. The reason I bring it up is because it has a very introspective kind of feel as well. And I think that what Joel was saying touched on that with this song too, because it has that, you need someone in your corner, but you have that sort of internal fire as well. You know what I mean? But it's not always there in a way. As far as the judge, jury, and defendant, that one still eludes me.
I can't remember who writes the music for them. I think it might have been... It's either all of them or the singer.
I know Dustin is heavily, the bass player, is very heavily involved in the songwriting. He writes a lot of the songs.
Oh, okay.
He's like, he is just as talented on the guitar as the other two guys. As JB, and who's the rhythm guitarist, Julian?
Not Dustin. Fucking, what's his name?
Dustin's a bass.
Brent Rambler.
Yeah. So JB and Brent and Dustin, all equally fantastic guitarists. And I do know that it might have even been this song. I've read in the interview somewhere. It's like, give this like a 2-star, because I don't know which fucking song I'm referring to. But one of the songs off his album was broken down on YouTube or in an interview on one of those metal websites. And Dustin, who took the lead on it. And I think, that my understanding is that he has quite a bit of creative influence when it comes to the songwriting of August Benjamin. I don't know if he's responsible for the lyrics, but in terms of the musical components, he plays a massive part.
Yeah, interesting about the drummer, Matt Griner, did you say his name was?
Griner.
Matt Griner, yeah.
Yeah, I had to wait for a while to figure that one out, but I just had to wait and try and find a video where he said his own name.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's
No, he says Griner, so let's go with Griner.
So like we were saying before, they've been in the band for 10 or so years and they're all like grown-ups now. They don't wear, I guess, the metal attire anymore. They just seem like in a business
show. JB Brubaker plays every show in thongs.
Yeah.
For a man from Amish country, which is a reference to their documentary, I'm not being racist or whatever, he wears thongs a lot. For a man that's from Amish country in Pennsylvania that's not Australian, that guy wears thongs a fuckload.
That's good.
Like to the point where that's like honorary citizenship worthy.
Yeah. And so like a few of them came from, I guess, out in the country. I'd assume it would be quite hard to make a metal band, get into the metal scene if you come from the country, because it's hard, isolation and all that. But yeah. So Matt Griner plays the drums, as we know, but that's his only like step that he's taken into the metal world. He's actually the kind of guy that's like, if he had a Tinder profile, it would be like, I like fishing, hunting, shooting, killing, skinning animals, and I play drums as a bonus. So it's interesting to see where some people come from, and then they're brought together by this whole metal music thing. Not everyone just lives it and breathes it, you know? You don't have to be like that.
No.
Just dip your feet in if you want, and this guy seems to be
If you
that.
Get a chance, Google just August Burns Red 2008. These dudes, all of them were rocking like Flock of Seagulls back in the day.
Flock of Seagulls?
Like the fringe with the hair, like the emo fringe. Yeah. They were all rocking those back in the day. So there was, you know, like 2003 to 2007 or 8, there was definitely that trend.
Yeah.
But
they've grown out of it now.
Like you said,
except JB, he's kind of still rocking it. But
yeah. You see interviews with them and stuff, and like you don't know people personally, but you just can't help but think they're all really nice dudes.
Yeah. This is the lead singer. He has a charity. I think he's had it for like 5 years or so, and it's about supporting youth in his community, which like speaks volumes, doesn't it? Because like we said, the band
Heart might, Support, it's called.
Yeah, Heart Support. Heart Support or Heart?
So Heart, like you're beating heart.
Yeah.
So it's run with, blah, 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 blah. I said it here a second ago. Lurs is a, this is Wikipedia facts. Where's that fucking, what's that guy with that weird, awkward dude that does the Wikipedia fact or fiction?
Oh, for Loudwire.
Yeah, that guy. This is a meme for him. Yep, I've completely lost that bit of information. Yeah. Apparently he runs it with two of the guys from August Burns Red and some of the guys from We Came as Romans.
Oh, true. There you go.
No, sorry, that's something else.
Okay,
there you go. Right. He does run a charity though. It's called Heart Support.
Well, thank you for that little bit of information that you got on Wikipedia. back to the fucking structure of the song and the guitar. I don't want to say it's a simple kind of riffage and the breakdowns are simple. It's not like that.
It's not simple at all. I mean,
fair enough. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the main riff that you hear at the start, it's repeated. It's just like the hammer-ons you can hear. It's the same notes repeated. It's trying to think of a way to help people visualize it without just playing it for them. But basically he plays the same notes and he plays the same notes again, but fast. There's like a hammer on in there. So it's a repetition of the idea, which is quite simple. Yeah. But then obviously the speed has changed, the tempo blows, made a note shorter, one longer kind of thing. Yeah. And just something as simple as that mixes up that whole riff, makes it catchy, makes it flow nicely. And then it's good to see, like I said, a simple idea used in a song like this, basically.
I get you, sorry, go Julian.
No, I was just going to say quickly, there is a video you can find on YouTube of Matt Griner doing clinics, and relating to what Joel's saying, that song Provision, right? He plays this foot pattern with his double bass, which you don't know straight away is the opening bit from Provision, right? And then he goes, what you can do is you don't just play the same bit with your hands, you do different things with your hands over the top of this one thing. And it's a fucking mind-blowing experience, because then you realize that the first 30 seconds of solo Provision, his fucking feet are doing the exact same thing, but his hands are doing, like, there's fucking blast beats, there's a breakdown, there's all this, like, weird jazz timing shit, and it's all over the same thing. So further from what Joel's saying, there's, you know, these guys are the kind of outfit that will do that. They'll have one thing, and then, like, a bass thing, and then they'll improve on that or change it a bit or add something, take something away, you know.
Yeah, using a basic idea, then adding a little bit of flair to it to give the creative kind of
That's thing. Right. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm just trying to find a tab for this because, you know, I bought a guitar 2 weeks ago, so now I know tabs.
I get what you're saying about that, Joel. I think especially early on, this song progresses in a really beautiful way. I think it's pretty sick how it all ends up, but how it hooks you in at the start, like, yeah, those hammer-on licks early on. They are, I guess, at their core, they're quite simple, to play. But when I was saying the song's not simple at all, I mean, the way it's structured, the way it flows, the way all the instruments collaborate, that's complex as hell. And they've done a fantastic job to make it work. I mean, at the individual level, some components might be very easy to play, but bringing all that together to make this piece of art is just, yeah.
What tunings are played in?
I think it's drop C, if it's on a 6-string guitar.
Sounds like it, but
and
don't take our word for that.
It's definitely like this, have to be C minor, right? But C minor scale, which is a very common metal scale, very easy. I'm pretty sure that big notes in the riff I was talking about before, basically like C, E, and D. So it's just, yes.
Yeah, quite simple. Sounds, yeah. Sounds like it's sort of hitting that natural minor key. But I was watching a breakdown of JB just giving it the instrumental run through. There were no vocals incorporated in
it. Was that like his coronavirus living room playthrough that he was doing?
Yeah, with his cat. Yeah. for a little cameo. But by the look of things, it's like, as most August Burns Red song would be, that in a minor key, in a kind of that sad or bittersweet tone to it a lot of the time. But what I noticed JB was doing, it seems like he's playing a lot of diminished chords, which really, if you listen carefully, like it's early on especially, it's when I think it's lyrically when they're talking the Righteous Wrath. Sounds like he's playing, and looks like he's playing diminished chords.
And they're quite
diminished chords have that very, yeah, and have this very demonic feel to it. And it creates, you know, people call them like satanic chords sometimes, or progressions that involve them. And it's like, yeah, and if you listen to it, it's like, damn, it's like, it that sums it up quite well. But it's used very tastefully. It's not like this is a demonic house, Hail Satan kind of song. I mean,
it's not a bunch of Christians
it would be, but yeah, but this used very subtly and tastefully. And when you really listen closely to the guitars, it's interesting to see what's going on there.
Yeah, because it's actually, as some guitarists may know, when you're starting to get into diminished chords and even some minor chords, they almost sound, when you're playing, you feel like you're playing it wrong, or it's so badly played that it sounds off, and it's hard, you feel like you won't be able to incorporate that into a song. At least I felt that way for a while with some of those diminished chords. So it is possible, obviously, to put them into your metal music, into any music, and as long as you can play it properly, I guess, and well, and know how to use it with the theory. Mm. Yeah.
The music is good. It's fair to say, but when I first heard this, when I first heard this song, I had a reaction that I'm starting to get a lot more used to or scared of in my older, I remember Joel messaged our group chat and said, I fucking knew ABR today. And I said, sweet. So I put it on and you have that sort of like cringe moment where you're like, oh fuck, I hope it's not shit. You know what I mean? And you go, oh shit, I hope it's not shit.
Listen to the album just in case.
Yeah, exactly right. But you know, you sort of get into the song and it's got that not washy, not tinny recording sound, but it doesn't have that super tight bass balanced, I guess, that I always talk about, which isn't a bad thing, but that is sort of like their sound, but they've turned it up a little bit more this time. I've no idea if I described that accurately or not, but and I was just like, oh, there isn't a breakdown. There's no, I've got 2 minutes and I was like, oh, there's no breakdown. There's a little bit of that Righteous Wrath, but you're like, oh, fuck, is that going to be it? And then the breakdown hits and you're like, yep, okay, cool, they're back.
Yeah, and then the breakdown hits again.
Yeah, all that fucking stress just goes, and then you remember that you've just heard 2 minutes of like sick riffage, fucking Matt Griner just not playing anything generic on the drums.
Yeah.
You know, because as soon as it comes in, he's got those fucking flares on the toms and he's playing in and out of the fucking time signature and
he's just doing what he does.
So
it's really good.
You know, it's one of those like light bulb moments you go, oh yeah, don't want, like these guys have still got it. You know what I mean? Like 15 years on, no worries at all.
Like we said, they deliver.
Yeah.
And on those breakdowns, we talked about Matt Griner jumping in and out of different time signatures, which grooves and feels. And but one thing that really like stood out to me, and like this is used in metal quite frequently, but August Burns Red do it particularly well. You know, when they get to the breakdown, it's not just straight to halftime. It's just a slight drop, a slight shift in tempo. That's all it is. And that's like, as a drummer, like, you know, I'm very low mediocre on drums at best, but Julian, you can probably relate, like to be able to keep it tight and fluctuate the tempo deliberately is not an easy thing to do so precisely.
It's like, it's a more complicated version of the deathcore halftime. Because, like, you know, we all know generic deathcore. There's like, they've got a breakdown and then they'll just go like fucking sludgy as shit, slow as all get out.
Halftime is easy, right?
Yeah, just play half as many things. It's fine. Don't worry about it. But you have to have this internal metronome going in your head because your limbs are doing way less. So you don't have that natural sort of flail of one hand. You know, like if you're playing a breakdown and you're doing like a 4-4, quarter notes on the china, you just like, that's your count, like 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, and that's how you count, that's how you keep in rhythm. But when you're doing like the big fucking flails and the fucking tooth, like, you know, cross your sticks at the top and look like a sick cunt from Carpathian, like, you know, that can be a little bit more challenging for for any drummer, I'd say. Like, if you lose focus at any point, you can, you know, you can fuck up. So
yeah,
it is just one of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And Matt, what amazed me when I actually listened to this song a little further, when it gets to the second breakdown at the end, the tempo slows again.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what the hell? And then he goes into, and then he is hitting it like in what would be the equivalent of the halftime of what he was playing previously. But it's like, then he goes into hitting half notes, I think, on the china at that point or something like that. It's like you just, it's different layers of breakdown, and it's fucking sick. And it's like, you know, I was trying to find a way to sort of visualize, but it's like, you know, you're going through hell and you're like just getting one, like you're getting a little bit deeper into it as you go, as the song progresses. And
I was going to say too, with the guys playing guitar, look, I'm not a guitarist, so I can't definitively say they're good, but I watched some of their playthroughs and I'm like, all right, you guys know what you're doing. Like, you've played guitar before, you know. Like, they're good enough that I'm not going to say now that I play guitar, but now that I've started playing a bit of guitar, I've been watching a few more guitar playthroughs. So I watched those ones that JB did when he was at home, and you understand that these guys are not just fucking, you know, it's not just a big power chord during the verse and then some fucking, you know, it's riffing the whole way through. So I was going to say, these guys were on the Parkway Drive Reverence North America tour with Polaris. Now I look at the guitarists in Polaris and I think, fuck, they're insane. Like, holy shit, you got to be good to be that good. You know, seven strings, yada, yada, yada. We talked about it in that episode. They did a show, which I think I might have even mentioned, where Polaris had to stretch out their set list a bit longer and they didn't have one of the guitarists. So they got JB to do a song called Casualty with them.
Oh yeah.
And the dude learned, he said he learned it in 45 minutes. Like, they did a little video diary with JB, and JB's like, he's got his phone in his hand. He's like, yeah, hey, I'm just going to learn this, the song. It's called Casualty. And then they cut to like 10 minutes later and he's just fucking shredding it on stage with them. And you're just like, all right, fuck. Like, the point I'm getting to is that was a fucking hard song and you learned that super quick. Like, how good do you have to be to just be able to look at someone else's music and get their rhythm and their feel and go, yep, no worries, got it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's just, it's one of those things. You, as a musician, it's not that good. You just go, fuck, I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to give up. Like, I don't know how many times I've watched Matt Griner play drum throughs or play throughs and just thought, I don't want to play the drums anymore. I'm done.
I know the feeling, man. Know the feeling. Yeah.
So,
yep, I'll just stay casual forever.
Yeah, I'll just stay in unranked. So,
now, on that note, when I mentioned before, Dustin, the bass player, being a phenomenal guitarist in his own right, he shreds, man. He's absolutely phenomenal player. Like, he writes a lot of their riffs. He's came up with at least one or two for this album that I know of, and Guardians, that is this album that Defender's on. And he's exactly the same, man. Like, he's just like at another level of musician, and he does it with so much ease. And I remember watching a video of him doing a playthrough of, what song was it? Something off. What was their last album called, Julian? It was
It wasn't Found in Faraway Places.
No.
Phantom Anthem.
Phantom Anthem, yeah.
Yes.
One of the songs off that. Can't recall which one, but this is the bass player just shredding through it with as much ease as JB would. And it's like, no.
That's the thing about bass players, is they're so often underrated.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everyone just looks and goes, oh, you're just a bass player. You know what I mean? Like, you're there because you can't play guitar. Now, Jair O'Connor from Parkway Drive, originally the band's merch guy.
Yeah.
They got him on for the Killing with a Smile European tour before he didn't know how to play a bass guitar. So they had to teach him that. I think he's pretty good now. But, you know, it's that's sort of just a meme. But I think, yeah, bass players are often – like you think if you're that fucking good at guitar, why do you play bass? For bass
it's an art in itself, right?
Exactly right. And as a percussionist, I have a bit of – I got a lot of love for bass because bass is technically a percussion instrument. Like in a lot of Colin's going to belt me for this. A lot of classifications, it's considered – a percussion instrument. So bass and drums need to have a good synergy. You know what I mean? Because if one of you is out from the other, that whole bottom end is just going to sound terrible.
Yeah. I mean, they don't call it the rhythm section for nothing, man.
Like, well, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Bass and the drums, it's the rhythm section. It's got to be tight. They've got to work well with each other. And it's not just about how complex something is or how.
Yeah, you can have two. You can have two of the sickest guitarists ever, but if your drum and bass section isn't like harmonizing, it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, absolutely. Like they got to be at the same level.
Yeah, that's kind of me just talking up being a drummer, though. love that.
Every band member plays its role, and yeah, without the bass and drums, it's just, you know.
Yeah,
in these types of genres that we discuss, like they play integral roles, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's why not every song has a fucking flute or a violin in this genre.
And before we move off Dustin, I just wanted to say that as a big geek and Legend of Zelda fan, Dustin did a mad ass shredded version of the Legend of Zelda theme song on YouTube. Check it out.
Oh, really? Like,
showcases his talent. It's just sweeping throughout the entire thing. Okay, just a guitar run through. I think he might have tracked the bass as well, like as an instrumental. I think he tracked the bass, he did all the guitar parts, and I think he got Matt Griner to do the drums.
But there you go.
It's basically Always Burns Red single. Instrumental single, yeah.
It's worth mentioning at this point that, like, not to, like, I know Joel, you know them, me and Daniel are sort of fanboying a little bit, but like, ultimately, the reason for that is, and why we always reference these guys, is from what we've already talked about. They are like a cornerstone of what good metalcore was, is, and I believe will continue to be. That's why they get you. I can compare them to so many different bands or so many different bands to them. I think because it's in this episode, that's absolutely worth mentioning. It's not just fanboying. There's a bit of that, absolutely. But when you're that talented for that long, that's the reason that people will continue to just even bring you up in conversation. Do you know what I mean? Yeah,
you're saying their style is kind of the roots of the metal genre, or the metalcore genre, I guess, and everything can be maybe related back to there. And from their style, different ideas have sprouted and, you know, created different branches of metalcore and metal.
Yeah. Well, they said a few years ago, because they reckon their style's changed quite dramatically. And I don't disagree with that, but if you look at, like, my favorite record came out 12 years ago by them. It's called Constellations. And that's, but again, sick riffage, huge fucking breakdowns, really good lyrics. Do you know what I mean? All around great music, but with this, still sick riffage, different style of breakdowns. You know what I mean? They're not just, the Messengers record these guys did is like a meme for with older metalcore people, because the China on Matt Joyner's drum kit just got fucking abused that whole record. Like, it was just like, it's just da 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 breakdown and then something and then a breakdown. Do you know what I mean? Like a really good breakdown, but you know, they definitely can't talk for shit tonight. They definitely had that sort of change, but stayed the same, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So Daniel said that he likes the Zelda song they did. And you've obviously said some of your favorite albums. What are some of the other songs that are actually amazing, worth listening, that you guys really rate highly?
I would say their record called August Burns Red presents Sledden Hill. It is a Christmas themed record with a lot of old timey classics from the Christmas season.
Yeah.
I would say my favorite song of theirs is easily a song called Whitewashed. I also like that because I'm colorblind. So that's, you know, I feel that's a very good song. And I would, another one I would say is one of the newer ones called Invisible Enemy from the Phantom Anthem.
Yeah, that was great. That was their lead single.
I left one out, Joel, because I think that's the one you're going to say.
Yeah.
Okay, well, Joel, you go then just in case I say yours.
I was going to say like a song by them that I think is great is Indonesia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was because it was the first time I heard by them, kind of got me rolling on the train. I was a bit late to the party, but, you know, whatever. And you said that song was about...
There was a missionary from, I don't think he was from Lancaster. His name was David Chapman, I believe. And long story medium, he lived and worked as a missionary providing food and aid and whatever to people in Indonesia. And I think he was the pilot. I think he was an amateur pilot. That part I'm not 100% on. But basically, while he was working as a missionary in Indonesia, his plane crashed into the side of a mountain and killed him. So that is in from you know that's what that song is about because they name check him, Jake Lewis name checks him towards the end of the song. He screams, "David, rest in." He drags out the David. He said, "David, rest in peace."
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So wow, but it's, okay. Yeah, it's quite the lyrics for that are very very powerful because it's not just saying this was a man of God. It's saying this was a man that did a lot of good.
Yeah, unsung heroes. Yeah.
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 I'm going to have to jump on a triple check. I believe his name was David Chapman. I'm not 100% if he was the pilot or not, but Joel, continue.
Oh, that was it for me. Don't you got a song?
I'm not going to, I can't just say one. But
fair enough. All right, moving on.
Right. Righto. But if I had to pick one for sure, I'm going to say Fault Line of Rescue and Restore. I think that's become one of their staples. It's probably one of their, it's definitely a staple in their live set. To my understanding, I've never seen them live, but the footage I've seen and the set list I've seen posted, and I think it's one of the more well received songs by them. But it's just musically very powerful, and that entire album, I really love the that's my favorite, but Rescue and Restore. I know it's not everyone's favorite, probably not the popular opinion, but in some ways, like in some parts of that album, you could argue that they're using very pop-like melodies. Not with the vocals, but with the, you know how JB will do his little sort of melodic undertones, lead guitar undertones, right? And he'll just, there's a lot of that in Rescue and Restore, and it's, and I think it's used very beautifully. And I think some people think they sort of overdid it on that album.
Mm.
They've sort of a bit too much focus on melody, but I think it's I think the melody that they use that JB's able to bring to life through his guitar complements the rest of the musicians really really well. And Fault Line is probably the best example of that. Like it's got this hook, this melodic hook that's used throughout the song, the start of the song, verses, and then just before the big breakdown at the end. And it's a sick song, absolutely sick song. And I will mention maybe. Because, you know, it's only how old's Guardians now? A couple of months.
5 or 6 years, I think. Oh, sorry.
Guardians, a couple of months.
Yeah.
Rescue and Restore was, 2013, I think. But Guardians, a couple of months old. Check out, you guys haven't already, check out Ties That Bind. Track 7, I think.
Even knows
that. Yeah. All
right. Anyway, let's stop fucking sober jerking over our favourite songs by them. Fuck, did you guys see how they, when they originally got together to play music, they played in like an egg shed on one of the boys' farms or something?
Yeah.
Fucking crazy. Yeah,
that's just quickly, that guy's name was David Clapper, sorry, and he was from Lancaster.
Okay.
They put out a little, there was a little doco they did, like a mini doco just about the band. And yeah, it was on, I think, Matt Griner's parents' farm, and it was like an egg shed or something like that. And they had, they played in this old like cool room. That's they said crazy. it just fucking smelt terrible all the time, and they had to like hang shit from the ceiling because like the insulation was like falling out and all that, and it's still there. They still have it to this day, I believe.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. I was gonna jump into the MVPs of this song, and I was gonna just say it's the breakdowns are the most valuable part of this song, but what I think about it, it might be the vocalist. We haven't really talked about him much, and like this song, the power from the lyrics, as we always say, the delivery being so important, how his pronunciation of all the syllables going through the verses so well, some of it is understandable, some of it isn't. It's just, I think it's a fucking a real good showing of talent and skill lyrically. So I'm going to say he's the most valuable.
Yeah.
I agree. I think Jake's, what I like about Jake's vocals, he's an unclean vocalist that you can understand. Like,
sometimes
you can hear the lyrics. Yeah.
Sometimes you can. It's, I think for me, it's 50.
I think more than others. Like,
yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
You know, I always say I struggle. Like, if I'm listening to metalcore, like originally I'm not listening to it for the lyrics because I can't understand the lyrics, but
but he's definitely more accessible.
He's a very, like I said, he's a very powerful screamer, similar sound to maybe The Ghost Inside, possibly As I Lay Dying, a little bit like Winston from Parkway, who we talk about a lot. That really, not guttural Julian, but a very powerful scream from like good support from the stomach through the chest.
Yeah,
really,
that's the chest voice scream.
Yeah, growly. It's it's good.
He's good live too, I think. Yeah. So I've their earlier stuff. He tends to go towards his higher pitch stuff live, which I didn't think was that amazing. But he's definitely just solid live.
Who's someone that's shit live but has a good record sounding voice? we should have asked this earlier.
How much shade are we allowed to throw?
All the shade. I don't care.
Go for it.
Oh, you're going first, Joel.
Oh, I can't think of anyone that I've seen that was...
Bull fucking shit, you can't.
I'm trying. It's just... I should have thought about this one before just coming up with a fucking random question that no one can answer. It happens a lot.
Yeah, who's shit? I don't want to say anything bad about a band that I like, but I don't know. All right, I'm just going to say it. Aaron Stringer from Amity, he's not shit live, but I think because they tour so much, his voice just gets hammered.
Well,
it's just harder to do those really high highs that he used to do when he was a lot younger.
Well, they say touring and playing like every day or every second day can put so much strain on the voice. They can get vocal cord damage, and you can affect your voice permanently. And some people, I've heard stories, needed operations. So it's very taxing. Like, it's almost like an extreme sport if you fucking go on a tour and sing every day.
Yeah,
so you've got to give them a bit of a break as they get towards the end of their tours and stuff. Their voice will probably start to degrade a little bit. But next week, that's what we'll do. We'll find people that are shit live.
I know one. Mark Hoppus from Blink-182. I'm sorry. I love the dude. He sucks live. He's just not good live. Like, he's not bad, but you listen to him and you're like, yeah, okay, like, we know what's going on here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's me. Tom DeLonge's not much better either. Yeah, I'm just going through my list of bands. I don't know. I think it's a thing in metalcore that vocalists are going to have really good days and really fucking bad days as well. There's much more of a swing between the two things from what I see, like CJ from Thy Art has got shit a lot because sometimes he just doesn't pronounce his words. It's just a rah, 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 rah.
It is.
Down to the syllables.
Before the Corona, I think Thy Art is Murder was one of the last bands I see that's, Sydney grindcore death metal, and that's literally what he did. It sounds exactly the same as on his records, though, so I can't say.
Yeah.
Is this a good things, Joel?
What's up?
Are you referring to good things?
Yeah.
Did you see how good was that Wall of Death, though?
That's one of the craziest things I've ever seen in my life. Is that it hadn't rained in fucking ages. I guess the ground was completely made of dust. And the fires in Australia had started, so it was like very smoky. Like the clouds had come over, that would just smoke. I think you remember you were there. For me, I have asthma because I'm a bitch, and it was getting hard to breathe from the smoke and then all this dust. And this fucking wall of death happened, and it was like a fucking, a tornado, a dust storm just erupted, and people just hitting each other. And I was just like, couldn't fucking see, couldn't breathe, eyes. It was fucking crazy. I don't think it was like the best experience because I was uncomfortable, but it was very fucking metal. Right? Yeah, it was good.
Actually, we made you uncomfortable, mate.
We didn't talk about This Week in Metal, but just quickly, you mentioned The Ghost Inside. They have a new record dropping at midnight tonight.
Uh-huh. Hey, okay. It's Thursday.
That drops at midnight tonight. My boss and my mate has been frothing over it because he's a big TGI fanboy. But from what they've put out so far, that looks like it's not going to disappoint.
Okay.
So. I don't know that anyone else is. Haven't seen anyone else talk about new music recently, but that's the big one.
I mean, yeah,
Barclay put out the Viva La Underdogs.
Yeah, that was live. Yeah, I checked that out.
That was pretty good.
There's actually plenty of new music, and I was going through a list of it this week, but I can't remember any of the shit I was listening to at all. Sorry, listeners.
Classic didn't take notes.
And you know me, just listen to the same old from this is still a new album. Guardians is still a new album to me. So.
Right.
I think to sum it up, August Burns Red is a band that you can listen to Messengers all the way through to Guardians, and you won't be disappointed. You'll always find something you'll like.
Well, like our fans and listeners, what I do is I just go to the bangers list on Spotify and hit shuffle. And then when I find new songs, I message us at Twitter, the bangers list.
Who was sponsored by this week?
Oh. I don't know.
Oh, dear. All right. It's that time. The bangs.
I was going to say, let's go. I'm done. We've been here for fucking ages. I knew this would be a long podcast, but fair enough. I'm going to go first. I want to give it 9.5 bangs out of 10. It's a borderline masterpiece because of its simplicity and, you know, it's all that's great.
9.5. Yep, I agree.
All right. I was going to say 8.5, but the more we've talked about it throughout the song. Yep, 9.5 all around.
Oh, unbelievable. The highest scoring song ever on the bangers list.
It's good, man.
You can tell Joel's sick of it. He just wants to go.
Actually, no, what else is really cool about this song is the film clip, and it's like...
It's anime, right?
It's anime. I thought it was just like a comic book come to life kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Animated cartoon deal.
It kind of rips off the whole like Marvel movies at the start as well, which has the ABR instead.
Oh, yeah. Very cool. So give it a listen. Let us know what you think. Hopefully we'll be back next week with another song, another banger. And until then, take it easy. Peace. Is that it?
Yeah, that would be it.